call State Government Finance Committee to order. The clerk will note the roll. First item on the agenda is Representative Sanford, have you had a chance to read the minutes for March 3rd?
So move, Mr. Chair.
We have a motion by Representative Sanford to approve the minutes for March 3rd. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion then prevails. Now, first, we're going to change the agenda a little bit. We've got people who are presenting bills in other committees and have to be other places, so we're going to take Representative Cornish's bill first, I believe. Representative Cornish then moves House File 1621.
Yes.
It's all yours, tell us about it.
Mr. Chair and members, what we have in front of us today is House File 1621. What this is legislation to propose that we take $600,000 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Administration and be doled out in $50,000 grants each to Regional Development Commission. The reason for this is in the bill you'll notice that on line 16 on page 1 through 24, let's see, actually on the back it goes, there's certain criteria. Small cities and townships, when they're planning, doing everything from development of local zoning ordinances to transportation plans, a lot of times don't have the staff needed to plan for these things. So what this do would be make available funding to the regional development commissions across the state to make grants to assist in the planning. I've got 18 cities in my district, 24B, all of them under 2,500 people. And they could use this in a bad way because, say they get a subdivision or planning or transportation plan of some sort, then they could access this additional help. The Department of Administration, I think, is here to testify if need be, but they are already set up for this operation with the division within the Department of Administration, and Region 9 and other regions are ready to implement this if they had the $600,000. So with that, I would like to introduce John Chell and have him introduce himself and explain a little bit about the bill, if that's okay.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Chell.
Yeah.
Chell. Okay, if you state your name and who you represent for the record, you may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Chell. I'm Executive Director of the Arrowhead Regional Development Commission. We are a development commission established in 1969, and our boundaries include the seven counties of northeastern Minnesota. In 2000 and 2001, we had a previous level of funding for local planning assistance through the good work of this legislature. That money was administered through the then Office of Strategic Planning and was used all over the state of Minnesota to address the planning needs of units of government, small towns particularly. In northeastern Minnesota, for example, we had about eight projects that we used these dollars for, and they included planning for comprehensive planning on a multi-jurisdictional basis for the communities of Hibbing, Chisholm, and the township of Vulcan. For sewer and other infrastructure work for the cities of Tower and Bowabic, and geographic information system implementation programs for communities and the county of Kuchiching County on the Canadian border. These dollars are important for several reasons. Number one, in smaller communities, as Representative Cornish mentioned, they have little or no planning staff with which to do their own municipal or township planning. In several cases, for example, in northeastern Minnesota, we have used these funds to help mitigate the planning process for annexation between townships and local communities. In other cases, we've been able to plan for municipal wastewater systems, transportation efforts, and as I mentioned earlier, the implementation of geographic information systems. In all of these cases, these are programs that local units of government without our assistance would not be able to implement. And secondly, the planning efforts themselves, from a local dollar perspective, are probably the first dollars to get cut in times of financial hardship. So we would ask your consideration, and I'd give you some other examples from around the state where these dollars have been important. They've planned for the Leech Lake Indian Reservation and Red Lake Indian Reservation housing projects. They've been used in the Red River Valley for floodplain management programs. They've been used in the southwestern part of this, for communities in the southwestern part of Minnesota for their local planning needs, particularly housing and economic development planning. As I said earlier, planning is the first thing to go, but we can use these dollars to leverage considerations of many multi-jurisdictional planning efforts, and we certainly can use these dollars to help our communities plan for their own futures, whether they are in economic hard times or in growth spurts caused by migration out of the mosquito control district. So we appreciate your consideration of this bill, and I would be happy to answer your questions on this legislation.
Representative Cornish, I notice you're asking for $600,000 to be appropriated. And on line 9, the appropriation for grants of $50,000 each, or is it supposed to be up to $50,000? Because if you go with $50,000 each grant, that's 12 grants, and you're not going to really do a lot with it. So I'm wondering if you want to do an oral amendment on line 9 that says this appropriation is for grants, strike of and put up to $50,000 each.
Mr. Chairman, members,
Mr. Shell,
I think language as it is or in your proposal would work for us. The way most of the Regional Development Commission have used these dollars would be grants of again broken down at the local level of between $5,000 and $10,000 apiece. The idea here is to give each of the Regional Development Commissions $50,000 to use on behalf of their local units of government. But at that level, I don't know that there's any one case where the whole $50,000 was used for one project.
Okay. Representative Seifert, you had a question.
Mr. Chair, and I might have missed this, but this question might be to the fiscal analyst. Is this one-time money, or is this ongoing appropriations?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Roberts.
Actually, that's an interesting question because we included language, and normally I would say I think this is one-time money, but we did include language that was passed last year that said the base funding is now defined by the second year appropriation. So we're actually working with Department of Finance on clarifying how that would apply. I think this is intended to be one time. I don't know if that's the author's intent. We could make it clear.
Mr. Chair, I think the intent would be that it's one-time money to kind of as a catch-up, but, you know, base expansion in the second year adds to the digging of the hole for next biennium, and I don't know if it's appropriate between lines 8 and 9 to say this is a one-time appropriation, but I think that's what the idea was when the bill was introduced.
Thank you. Ms. Roberts or Mr. Shepherd, do you have any suggestions on language on that, or how?
Mr. Chair, members, I think what Representative Seifert said would work perfectly well, just to put it up to the period on line 8.
So we're going to scrap my bad idea and go back to Okay. All right, so we would have an oral amendment. If there's any discussion on or comments,
is the author okay with that idea?
Representative Cornish, you okay with that?
Sure, yes, sir.
Okay. So then, Mr. Shepherd, then would you phrase that on after line 8, we would leave the period and then insert a new sentence?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
This is a one-time appropriation?
Yes.
Is that all you? Okay. 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 All right. So Representative Seifert then has an oral amendment to the bill. So after line 8, after the period, insert this is a one-time appropriation. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion then prevails. Okay. Then we have the bill before us. Members, Representative Paymark.
Well, that is somewhat of a follow-up question about where the money is coming from. There's money in
there's money to do this?
That represent Paymar, I think what we need to do is we'll lay this bill over as we look at the budget, and we're waiting for leadership to get us numbers and that, and we may look at possible inclusion into a bill, agency bill or a committee bill that would go forward to the floor. So at this point, there is no money, and I don't know if we print some more or what, so. But let's lay it, instead of, we'll lay it aside and for possible inclusion then, at that point, is the direction. Any further discussion on this before we lay it over? If not, then we'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the next item is Representative Seifert, since we'll do yours next.
Chair, I move House File 2101, recommend to pass and refer to the committee on ways and means.
All right, Representative Seifert moves House File 2101, be recommend to pass and be referred to the committee on ways and means. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. This is a bill that may be familiar to members who have been around here for a while. This bill, in a different form last year, was actually vetoed and staffed alone by the House and Senate. And some concerns from the administration that were not aired as we went from one committee to the other, to the floor, to the Senate, to one committee to the other, to the House with repassage and so forth. At the end of the day, ended up getting vetoed with a promise that we would try to clean up the concerns, bring it back this year. And meeting with the governor yesterday, I believe that we have worked out a lot of the concerns, and if we hear more as we move to the next committee, we will try to address them. But I think the first thing I'd like to do is just explain the bill, and I do have an oral amendment, one word that I would like to have added.
Okay, let's get the bill in order then.
Okay, what we'll do, page 2, line 21, delete 100 and insert 50, which lowers the threshold for businesses to, small businesses would be defined in this bill as of 50 full-time employees or less, okay, rather than 100, to narrow the scope down so the agencies won't have an enormous amount of people coming in, and try to keep it down to the mom and pop places or the smaller places, rather than 100 seem to be quite large in the opinion of some people. So I'm conceding to some folks' concerns, thought that we could go down to 50, so I'm okay moving that.
All right, then any discussion on that? If not, Representative Seifert moves an oral amendment. Get the bill in order on page 2, line 21, delete 100, insert 50. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion then prevails to the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, section 1 is something that has not really raised concern from people, but I will just give you a quick explanation. This is something that allows local governments of all sorts to request the Commissioner of Finance to prepare a local fiscal impact or a fiscal benefit note on a rule proposed by an agency. This is not something that's mandatory. It is only done by the request of a local unit of government. If members notice on page 2, lines 7 through 17, the local units of government or political subdivision requesting the note must pay for the fiscal impact note. So we are not going to bombard the Department of Finance with fiscal impact note requests and make them just eat the cost. And I have worked this out with the local units of government. Ms. Roberts tells me that we may have to have an understanding on how finance gets the money for this. The ways and means may have to explore potentially. But if members look at your fiscal note, that is based upon the Department of Financing, I think needing 0.6% to calculate fiscal notes under Section 1. But it's my intent to have the money that would be paid by the requester of the note to pay for that. So,
Representative Seifert and Ed, are finance is okay with this? Is there someone here from finance to charge us?
We talked about it last cycle, and I thought we had it kind of figured out. But if someone is here, you're welcome to come up and give us a thought.
Welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the record, you may proceed.
My name is Mike Roloff from the Department of Finance. I'm an executive budget officer, and I also coordinate the existing local impact note process. Finance would be fine with this as long as we kind of model that existing process as much as we can, which I believe is the author's intent, and also that there's a fee reimbursement mechanism that also is an incentive to the local governments to not make a lot of requests that they really...
Okay. All right. Thank you. Representative Seifert?
Mr. Chairman, members, if there's no more questions or concerns about Section 1, Section 2 relates to legislative approval for rules that have a fiscal impact on a, now just narrowed down to a small business that has the fiscal impact last year, just to let members know, was on any entity of any sort, $10,000 per year or instance on any entity, person, business, local unit of government, et cetera, big, large, small, medium-sized, whatever. And it didn't matter how many employees you had. If there was one instance of $10,000, then legislative approval is required for the whole docket of rules. So you could have 500 pages of rules, and this is a concern the governor expressed. The entire set of rules would have been jettisoned to the legislature for approval. How this bill differs from last year is that we are now narrowing it down to businesses of less than 50 full-time employees, and that the impact of the rule must be $50,000 or greater, or $50,001, I suppose, or greater, and that under lines on page 3, lines 15 through 21, we can take the severable portion of the rule that deals with fiscal impact, and that would jettison to the legislature. Not all the work that's been done in all the rules, but just that little portion that deals with fiscal impact on a small business. So we're trying to narrow it way down to rules that affect small businesses in a big way, because to come up with over $50,000 on a small business is a big chunk of money, and I think it should deal with discussion beyond just administrative rulemakers and get to the legislature to find out what the heck is going on. The bill is effective on August 1st of 2004.
Okay. Questions? Representative Thiessen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. How many rules would be covered by that we currently have be covered by this?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard can correct me if I'm wrong. We have no rules right now that would fit this. So this is only for prospective rules. Is that not correct, Mr.
Shepard? Follow up, Representative
Thiessen. Yeah, I think you misunderstand my question, and I probably phrased it very poorly. Rules that have had this law been in effect, do you know how many rules would have been affected? What are we talking about here?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I honestly don't know of rules. If this law were in place, say, 25 years ago, what would have triggered? You know, I honestly don't have, under last year's bill, we would have had the profile of learning because the school districts incurred a massive cost on that. There have been some regulations on cafes and restaurants, which is my Johnny one-note regulation argument on everything, and potentially nursing homes. I don't know. I haven't looked up a lot of specifics on this. I just think we're trying to get our arms around at least the small business people who are the mom and pop folks. And it is a big threshold. I've had, and Mr. Hickey is here from NFIB, I think, in favor of the bill, but I've had some people concerned that $50,000 is too high of a threshold, that, you know, at that point you're going out of business if you just have a single proprietor shop. You know, these numbers are arbitrary. For members who are wondering, where did you come up with this number? I worked with the administration and some of the agencies to try to come up with at least something that if it seems really egregious or really expensive that you're getting to the border of running someone out of business, at least that's a figure that we can put our arms around. I honestly don't think there'd probably be a lot of rules that would fit this, but that's a pretty big chunk of change to throw at a small business owner, be $50,000 and say, here, eat this. one instance or yearly over and over again. So it probably would be rare, but at least I think we need to get the process started and try to get the onus on a small piece of the bill rather. Obviously, it's a lot smaller than last year, but I think at least we're moving in the right direction.
Representative Teason?
No.
Representative Pima?
Well, I guess I was, someone answered my question, but I guess I was trying to understand what the problem is, A, and then B, some hypothetical situations that you could see coming up if the bill was passed.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Pima, that's an excellent question. I guess I'll use the small restaurant owner as an example, that if someone comes in and mandates something to their business through rulemaking, and I'm not exactly sure what it may be. It might be a remodel in their business, their equipment, etc., higher standard. I use the example of a health inspector in my area, in my old district, which is now Lyle Coonan's area, but just to give this as an example, we had a cafe where a lady had a microwave to warm up buns in the morning. That's all she used it for. And the inspector came around and said, sorry, you have to have an industrial strength microwave that's going to cost $1,600 rather than $99. And you're going to either have to not serve buns or you're going to have to buy this expensive microwave. And she said, look, I'm in a town of 300 people. I have to sell thousands and thousands of buns just to break even on this microwave, and that's ridiculous. Now, this probably wouldn't kick in because this is too high of a threshold. But if there was a supercharged version of that, like you have to replace something massively expensive, that's the only instance I can think of off the top of my head that would kick in. Because we're throwing out the school districts and the nursing homes. Those were the areas that I had some specific complaints on, say with the profile of learning or with some regulations that forced them to do some expensive things. But we tried to narrow it down to a small business flavor, mainly because we just want to see if the bill is even going to have a trigger effect in the first few years and then maybe come back when I'm gone, but somebody else wants to deal with this stuff, and broaden it out to some of the other areas that have had complaints. Last year's bill actually would have had some, I think, very good examples of triggers, but last year's bill was tailored down to 10,000 impact. And any entity, any group, any business, any nursing home, any nonprofit. So it's one of those things that they've just been narrowing down a lot to try to get it through and see if any instances come up.
Follow up, Representative.
Yeah, I remember the debate last year, but you're asking the committee to vote on a bill where you can't even cite an example of how it might even impact a community or a business.
Mr. Hickey might be able to give me an example from business perspective. They have expressed a lot of interest in this because they have a lot of complaints from regulations, so perhaps he could answer your question if you can think of a hypothetical that could come up.
Mr. Hickey, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record. Who you represent? You may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. Representative Plaintiff, not today, unfortunately. I don't have a list. I think, as Representative Seifert said, with the 10,000 trigger last year, I can think of some near misses ergonomic standards that, fortunately, from our perspective, never went forward on the old trigger of 10. I think you're raising a good question. I think that question also tells you, though, the impact of this bill in its current state is going to be pretty minimal. But we do support the bill. We do appreciate Representative Seifert trying to do something in this area to make rulemakers be aware of the cost of rules, even though this is a very high threshold. I guess as manufacturers, truckers would be two off the bat I could think of in our diverse membership would be affected, but we could try to do a survey or something quickly and get back to you. We don't have the examples today at 50,000. At 10, I think we can imagine a lot of things, but I don't have the answer you want today.
Follow up, Representative Pima.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions? Okay. Then Representative Seifert renews his motion that House File 2101 be recommended pass and be referred to Ways and Means. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Next bill then is Representative Anderson. and... Okay, that's fine. Representative Rhodes, do you want to move Representative Anderson's bill?
I'd be happy to move it. What is it? I assume...
Oh, I hear it.
Yeah, just move it here.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so Representative Rhodes moves House File 2594. And with that, Representative Anderson, welcome to the committee. Present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good to see you. Some of the old folks from way back when, good to be back in government, State Government Finance. Been a few years since I presented this bill, but we've passed it before, and it's a recurring issue of supporting our Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp at Camp Ripley. I have with me today Colonel Tom Simonette, who retired from the Minnesota National Guard, is now hired with the Air Force Reserve out of Rapid City, South Dakota, and he's here to talk about the bill because he works with volunteers, whether active or inactive or retired volunteers from the Guard who work with young people, and he also has spouses that have come forward to volunteer to work with these people. The Adjutant General has been very active with the youth camp in northern Minnesota, General Andreotti, and I'm sure that General Shaletto would be the same. But without my further conversation, I'll pass it over to Colonel Thompson. Okay.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Winnett, if you would state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Tom Simonette. I am representing the Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp. Thank you, Chairman and members of this committee, for taking the time to listen to this well-worth program. Since 1991, we have started this camp where we had roughly about 104 youths that attended a one-week session up at Camp Ripley. And they were able to partake in activities of bicycle riding, swimming, canoeing, archery, riflery, overnight camping, and then nightly campfires. And then on Friday, they would then celebrate a military day where the military members would wear their uniforms and the children would understand the respect for the flag with a proper flag disposal ceremony. At the beginning and end of camp, we would have an opening and closing ceremony and a graduation where the youth camp children would then be recognized for their service. Since that time, we have gone from that small number, 104 individuals, roughly 35 adult volunteers, to over 280 children going over a 2 1-week camp period, and then also expanding from the ages of 10 12-year-olds for youth camp to include the 13 and 15 age group, and then up to the 16 through 17 or 18 as counselors in training. So we've expanded to try to take in all the age range for those children. The camp runs by a staff of 100% volunteers. As I mentioned, there's roughly about 170 volunteers that work these 2 week camps, along with a lot of people that work in the back area, like myself, because I can't get up to camp, but I do help out by talking about the camp to different organizations like the VFW and American Legion, where we then solicit some of our donations. I have given to each one of you a packet of information roughly about the history of the camp, which I did explain in the beginning, the purpose of both the youth camp for the ages of 10 to 12, the teen camp for the ages of 13 through 15, and then just general public information that we have out on our website. To give you, on the final page of the packet is our annual estimated budget, which shows how we do spend our money. A lot of our money comes from, each camper pays $100 to attend the camp, which then we raises roughly about $25,000 of our cost. And the rest, like I mentioned, is going to the different VFWs and American Legions to collect the other funds. Why do we want, why did we put $50,000 in? each year we try to expand, or each 2 years we try to expand the camp to include more of the population of the National Guard family. Next year, maybe it might be to start looking at the younger children between the ages of 7 and 10 and see if there's a program that we could do for them, but that has not fully been developed at this time. That's really about all I have about your camp and some of the benefits. I could give you personal testimony about my daughter, which, if I can take a couple minutes of your time.
Yeah, that's fine.
Back in 1993, I sent my daughter up to this camp. I had a child who was failing at school, who had no friends. When we dropped her off, tears were in her eyes. Wednesday, I got a call from the counselors saying my daughter wanted to come home. And talking to my daughter, I said, you know, all you have to do is just hang in there for just a few more days. I also didn't want to really drive up all the way to the graphic camp.
But you were enjoying yourself, weren't you? You were enjoying life for a week, weren't you?
Yes. So something happened from that phone call on Wednesday to when I picked up my daughter Saturday morning. And what happened was she all of a sudden found her self-esteem. I now have a daughter that in May will graduate from college, that is going to be on Dean's Honor Roll in aviation, is brave enough to go out and get her pilot's license. And I attribute that all back to that day at that camp. Mine is not the only story. And if you go and, you know, I know there was an incident recently with the Adjutant General. And if you read some of the articles, people were testifying in editorials about what this camp did for these their own children. And that's literally why I have been so involved with the camp from that day forward and doing whatever I can. So.
Okay. Questions? Representative Newman.
For the witness, has there been an increased need for this camp by reason of the recent deployments overseas?
One of the things we do is any child that has a parent deployed, they are the first tier of children to get to go to the camp. Is there an increase? We don't track it based upon who is gone, but we want to make sure that those children get the first chance.
Follow up, Representative Newman?
No, thank you.
Okay. Other questions for the testifier? Okay. What we'll do, Representative Anderson, is lay us over for possible inclusion. Because, as you know, the current budget situation is kind of tough, so we got to take a look at this. So, all right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay,
members, thank you.
Okay, members, are waiting for Representative Hilty to come back up. 5 minutes. Okay.
Let me
cancel. Yeah. Okay. Oh, we're on a coffee break for a few minutes. So, Representative Hilty is just going to shut testifying on this bill, so should be up in there. Members, we are going to have a pretty heavy schedule next week. We have 16 bills right now that will probably need to be heard.
And Mr. Chairman, probably a few more coming.
And if Representative Rhodes keeps honoring us with more bills from his committee, we will have a busy week. What I'm looking at doing is next Tuesday and Wednesday, we would meet from 2:30 to at least 5 o'clock. We'll go straight through and our normal time. Because most of the committees seem like they're meeting after 5 o'clock. So we'll try to get as much as work as we've done to try to eliminate having to come back, because we'll all have committees after supper too. So instead of running multiple committees, let's see if we can get it worked out early. So that's the initial game plan. We may have to add another meeting in there someplace. We'll figure that out as we get near Friday and we start to see what bills will be coming our way. So as I always say, the situation's fluid at this point, right?
It's like, oh my God.
Are there any bills we want to reconsider?
Has anything failed in this committee?
That seems to be Thiessen's job to reconsider.
Thiessen can reconsider, we go back to whatever second, you know, we'll be back to this.
He's going to be second author to something.
Don't talk to him, Joe.
So we don't want to bring up the Eric bills?
Peterson, Green, Search. No other authors in the room.
Lichtenstein. Monaco. Seychelles. The Isle of Man, where's that at? Or any other country that has no corporate income tax? So does that include South Dakota? New sovereign nation of South Dakota, tax-free haven. Yeah, tax-free haven. It's just that, unfortunately, all the business people in my area moved there. I have the theme song for Jeopardy on my computer. Do you want me to call it up and have the think song?
I think Linda's got pizza from my email.
We pull up the gay marriage debate on House TV. You bet, where they're on right now.
When
did it start? It started at 2:30.
The line, I understand, was all the way back to the transportation building to get in. We should be selling tickets to help our deficit.
Where about you?
Charge tickets to help with the deficit. They said the estimates were 500 to 2,000 people.
So we're more important.
Which is about how many emails I've gotten on the subject in the last 5 days.
See, what are they holding?
Marty, I think 200.
You're on tape there, I just want you to know.
That's fine.
Come on, Marty, let's do it.
What I would say, that would be...
The next TV spot is there, right?
House TV, double click on that.
You gotta find where House TV is. Oh, here it is.
If there's a vote, I'll tell you.
We could recess so we can shut the tape off so we can speak freely.
I don't know how to do the sound noise. Well, there it is.
I think it's like 2 hours on each side or 3 hours on each side.
Well, they're going to be able to make them.
I think so.
Do we incorporate them together?
Does it say who that is?
Nice to have a kid around here.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let's see, what is it? Alt or FN? Page up.
Yeah,
remember that.
This thing here?
FN, page up. Page up.
Oh, page up.
The
I thought it said
page.
Mm-hmm. We have a look at the summary.
Just be prepared because I don't have a plug in.
Is that the reason why I want to use a card? Over on the left there. Yeah, that looked exactly like her. The blonde one?
I'm going to get out there.
What's all the front in the shoulders?
The governor.
This is really clear for all.
Yeah,
it's very good. What's the price of food and this for this year? Hey, there he is.
Representative Hilty moves House File 914. The record in the pass, and this would then be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative
Chair, what would be the purpose?
The tax committee chair requested, because of the language of taxes in your bill, I believe, in section, on line 22, it refers to taxes.
Mr. Chair, does it still make deadline if that moves there?
They would make our, yeah, we're still in deadline because we're moving along, so we're, I think we're okay. Representative Hilton.
Okay, I see, Mr. Chair.
Taxes in the country, and I have no idea. They can deal with taxes. I've got to pay mine in another month, so that's all I know.
Mr. Chair, before we get into the bill, I would like to make an oral amendment, which is merely to delete some of the language of the bill.
Okay.
Has been pointed out to me, the bill as it's currently structured names particular countries that are currently regarded as tax havens, but there is some pressure on some entities to change their policies and procedures so that I think it serves no particular purpose to have a list that may become obsolete at some point, or hopefully would have some countries that might be deleted, so it doesn't really serve a purpose of the bill to have the list anyway. So we could just delete the naming of the countries that are beginning on line 19. I believe the way that would have to read then is, for the purposes of this subdivision, tax haven country means, and then delete all of the language down to line 23. And on line 23, delete Seychelles and down the word other.
Yeah.
So that would be
Representative Hilton. Mr. Shepard says he thinks you have a copy of the old bill. First engrossment. Is that first engrossment that you have there?
If not, what is?
That's what we're working off of, I believe, is first engrossment. Okay.
I think it would be, yes.
Okay. And is that what yours is noted? Because it doesn't seem like it's tracking. Because I think what you're doing is if it tracks there, and you would delete everything down to line 21. And is where you'd stop deleting, I would assume, and then strike other, and then any country.
Correct.
Is what it would read. It has a corporate income tax rate.
That's correct.
I think that would clean it up.
Yeah, I had those lines. I had the wrong version there.
Okay, that's no problem. Okay, so
I believe Mr. Shepard also had pointed out that the section of statute to which this referred when it was first drafted has since been occupied by by another bill. So we need to change the statutory records, and I believe Mr. Shepard could tell us how to do that.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chairman, members, on page 1, line 8, where it says subdivision 17, it should say subdivision 18.
Okay. Okay.
So Mr. Chair, I would move that amendment.
Okay. So then Representative Hilton moves an oral amendment on line 8, delete 17, insert 18. Line 16, or actually, let's see here, line 17,
right.
After means, strike all the language through line 21 to the and, so you're striking the and.
Correct.
Leave any, delete other, and that will then put the bill in order.
That's correct, Mr.
Okay. All right, any discussion to that? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion then prevails. Representative Hilton to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. what this bill does very succinctly is to provide that the state shall not enter into any contractual agreement with any corporation that is incorporated in a tax haven country, provided that the United States is the principal market for public trading of the corporation's stock. The rest of the bill simply describes what the definition of a tax haven country would be, which is one that has no corporate income tax or has an effective tax rate of less than 10% of an income that does not arise or is not derived from that country. And Mr. Chair, the reason for this bill would not have a profound effect on the purchasing practices of the state of Minnesota, but I think that it does send a message that the time has come to be sent. And that is that United States corporations, companies doing the bulk of their business in this country and taking much greater than the average advantage of all of the economic infrastructure that has been provided for them at public expense. The highways, the railways, the ports, the airports, the telecommunications infrastructure have chosen to, by means of incorporating or reincorporating in countries that do not charge this tax, have chosen to evade paying any income tax in the United States or to the state of Minnesota, that would support all of those things that they take advantage of. I would say, Mr. Chair, that what it amounts to is that these are companies that want to belong to the country club, and in fact, they're the ones that play 72 holes of golf a weekend.
How come we don't get tennis? To do that with our business?
Exactly, Mr. Chair. We take advantage of the tennis courts and the pool and the exercise room and show up for all the dances and the dinners, but they don't want to pay their dues. And I think that it's not unreasonable to say, okay, if you have the ability legally to do this, if you can legally wiggle yourselves into the situation of evading paying those dues, by golly, we don't need to do business with you. Mm-hmm. And that, Mr. Chair, is the bill.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, I was just wondering if you knew of a business or two or a corporation that would potentially fit into this. Maybe we don't do business with them now, but can you think of any company in or out of Minnesota that might fit into the threshold of this?
Representative Hilty.
My understanding, I have not spoken with Mr. Allen from Department of Administration. I believe he's here available to testify. When we last discussed this bill, he did testify that at that time, had this bill been in place previously, it would have only affected $7,000 of purchasing by the Department of Administration. However, there is some potential for this because this is a rapidly expanding phenomenon. I believe that currently there are roughly 1,700 corporations that have chosen to do this.
Follow-up, Representative
Mr. Chair, maybe my question would be better directed to Mr. Allen, that I'm not sure what the $7,000 was. It's mango juice at the governor's mansion, or what was it that you purchased, but what type of business, could you give me an example specifically of a business or corporation that might be doing this? Because I hear about this on the news. I think CNN has had a lot on Lou Dobbs' show the last couple months about exporting America and so forth, and taken a lot of interest in that program, mainly because of Representative Hilty's bill is one of them. And I just kind of want to know what one business was it perhaps that admin did business with that was an offshore company or whatever they're called, tax haven company.
Mr. Allen, welcome to the committee. State your name and who you represent. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Allen, Department of Administration. I certainly believe, Representative Hilty, that that's what I told you a year ago, and I know that we did some investigation into it at the time. I honestly don't remember what the company was that we found at that point. I can try to recreate that, dig through our records and come up with that, but I don't know.
Okay. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might be able to answer a little bit of Representative Seifert's question purely by coincidence. A constituent of mine asked a question of me, why does the state of Minnesota buy all of its blankets for the prison system? This man happens to be in the prison system. Why do we buy all of our prison blankets from companies overseas when, in fact, there are companies within the state of Minnesota that manufacture blankets? Now, whether or not, frankly, we are purchasing blankets from a country that would fall under the category of a tax haven, I honestly don't know, but I do know that there are instances, legitimate instances, where we are exporting our business and using, you know, in effect, tax dollars when we could spend the money right here. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I actually have a better answer to that question than I did to the one that you asked me. The Department of Corrections actually manufactures its own blankets in their prison industries program, and they use materials that are American-made. There's been discussion of whether there's an opportunity to be buying Minnesota-produced wool as part of that activity, and MinCorps is looking at that as a possibility, but it's not an instance where non-U.S. Products are involved.
Follow-up? No. Representative Jacobson.
Mr. Chair, I will pass.
Okay. Representative Hilty, one that I heard about the other day on the news, and I don't mean to be partisan, but the Heinz Company. You cannot buy ketchup or products from the Heinz Company, which you know who our wife owns that. But they have 59 of their 74 corporations are licensed outside of the United States. So, you know, it's kind of ironic in that situation. But
it's surprising that there are a number of companies, Fortune 500 right. companies,
How would that?
One of them that has a total of 77 subsidiaries incorporated in tax haven countries is Halliburton. Mm-hmm.
So we're a checkmate.
Get your list ready.
Yeah, we'll get on the list and pair them off one by one. So, but really, that does create a problem if you really start breaking it down to, you know, what companies aren't really out in there, you know, and operating through many different subsidiaries, especially large corporations, you know, that we do business with every day. You and I probably see in the grocery store or when we go to, an outlet type of operation like Target or Walmart or, you know, whatever, or the Mall of America, you know. How many of those, and then really, it'd be interesting to see how many within the state of Minnesota that we do business with that really be affected just for our own state purchasing.
Well, that's true, Mr. Chair, and this is not a trivial issue by any means. It's the lowest estimate that I have seen of the amount of money in federal tax dollars that is not being collected because of this practice is $200 billion. How that affects the state of Minnesota, of course, is considerably less than that, but I would not think that it would have no consequence.
And then, Representative Hilty, how would that affect the purchasing of products by the state of Minnesota? Would it increase our costs because we're eliminating companies that are more competitive in the market, or are we, you know, are we going to be as competitive with our bidding process with those companies that would be excluded under this? I guess that's a question I would have. I don't know if admins ever looked at that.
You can ask Mr. Allen to answer the question very nicely.
Mr. Chair, I would assume there would be some potential for the state to pay more if a number of businesses that we would normally do business with aren't eligible to compete.
And Mr. Allen, have you looked and see how many vendors we do business with now would be affected by this bill?
Mr. Chair, we haven't. This hasn't been information that's been legally or contractually relevant. So it actually would be quite easy to implement this, I think it's written, because we could simply add language to our boilerplate solicitation documents that require agencies to give us this information, but it isn't information that we've historically collected.
And Mr. Chair, I might point out that in that regard, the last paragraph of the bill does give the Department of Administration the ability to waive this requirement basically as they judge to be necessary. Mm-hmm. So I think in any particular circumstance, we would not really suffer adverse economic consequences, and I think that the effect of the bill rather would be to smoke out some of these companies that have literally hundreds of subsidiaries that they tuck away for whatever nifty legal purposes they can invent, because they would have to attest under penalty of law that they were not so incorporated.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Comments?
Okay.
Then Representative Hilty renews his motion that House File 914, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee of Ways and Means. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Oh, excuse me. Not tax. Committee of Ways and Means taxes. Excuse me. Let's redo that. Representative Hilty renews his motion on 914, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee of Taxes as amended. Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, now we're on our way. And with that, members, we'll meet tomorrow. You've seen the agenda before us, and then we will post what we're going to do for next week, so look for those extended meetings next week. Thank you. Have a good day.